listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skulls in a pool of cerebral spinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Mass Combat Dilemma. Today I want to discuss several aspects of a particular area of combat that's a common bone of contention when people argue about the world of self-defense. Mass combat. That is, self-defense situations other than simple one-on-one fights. As a martial arts instructor, I'm frequently asked, is it possible for one person to defend himself or herself against multiple attackers? Now, I've heard many different answers to this question during my time as both a student and as a teacher. First of all, a single defender against multiple attackers is only one of the many possible scenarios that we should consider when discussing mass combat. But I'll discuss alternate scenarios later. Getting back to the question about whether an individual can defend himself against multiple attackers, a common response from many martial arts instructors to the question is, in my mind, just a bit dismissive. In this common response, the instructor answers by saying, if you're attacked by more than one opponent, you don't stand a chance. I'm not going to waste valuable training time preparing you for such a hopeless situation. While I don't entirely disagree with the sentiment that these instructors express, since such statements do stem from real acquired wisdom, I don't, however, think that instructors that make this their rote response to the mass combat question see the entire spectrum of possibilities. If you, perish the thought, were to find yourself in a fight with more than one opponent, and your opponents were all committed to the fight, and they effectively coordinated their efforts, then I agree that your chances of successfully defending yourself are minuscule. But that two-part qualification I just gave, one, that your opponents are all committed to the fight, and two, that they coordinate their efforts, is of extreme relevance to our discussion. Let's take the first qualification, commitment. There are certainly occasions with multiple attackers against one individual in which one or more of the attackers are only there because of peer pressure. They're frequently only present to visually swell the numbers for the purpose of intimidation, to undermine the morale of a potentially dangerous opponent. Back in the 1970s, I was, on one occasion, confronted by a coworker who was trying, unsuccessfully, to woo the woman I was dating away from me. I will call him Lover Boy. He had waited until the restaurant where we both worked had closed, and we were moving to our cars to leave. Lover Boy had what appeared to be an ally standing next to him, and he quickly made it clear that he intended to kick my ass. The workers at the restaurant that employed me knew that I was an avid martial arts practitioner, and I'm fairly certain that whether or not I was actually any good at it was a common topic of debate among them. In this case, whatever kind of reputation I did have, whether it was deserved or not, was the reason Loverboy had solicited the support of a friend whom I will now call Backup Boy. Instead of immediately leading a coordinated attack on me, which would have been the best tactic, Loverboy elected to engage in the pre-fight ritual. Now I'm going to make the concept of the pre-fight ritual the subject of a future podcast. But suffice it to say that it consists of loud, aggressive behavior, usually in an attempt to bluff or bully a potential opponent. As Loverboy launched into his ritual behavior, I noticed that Backup Boy seemed uncomfortable, as if he didn't really want to be there, as if he wasn't committed to the idea of actually coming to blows with another human. Loverboy's aggressive behavior was, naturally, causing an adrenaline dump in me. But despite this, I tried hard to appear calm and not respond in kind. Why does it take two of you to fight me? I asked, still trying hard to appear calm. "That kung fu shit isn't going to help you tonight," was his reply. I then employed what I thought was my best tactic in this situation and looked backup boy directly in the eye and quietly said, "I'm taking you out first." Backup boy pondered my words for a moment and then began to give the name that I've given him a new meaning. Backup boy began, well, backing up, leaving me momentarily one-on-one with Lover Boy. And that was enough for Lover Boy as well. He too began backing up, while also loudly berating Backup Boy for deserting him. Once I saw that the real danger was past, I got in my car and left. Now, please don't misunderstand me here. I'm not trying to create the impression with you that I'm some sort of badass. Far from it. I was nervous as hell. The thought of fighting two guys at once was daunting indeed. But the fact that Lover Boy suspected that I might be a badass, obviously he suspected it because he recruited an ally, was a tool that I could use. And I used that tool against what seemed to me to be the weakest link in Lover Boy's chain of aggression. Backup Boy. I enjoyed a positive result in this encounter because of a lot of luck, and perhaps also because of an inspired negotiation tactic. I like to think of it as an application of what Bruce Lee called the art of fighting without fighting. Many mass combat scenarios are best handled during the pre-fight ritual, if it should occur. Let's look at the second qualification for effective mass attack on an individual. Coordination. If the multiple attackers behave as a group instead of as individuals, then the defender is most likely toast. This doesn't even mean that they need to perfectly coordinate their efforts. After all, they have the numerical advantage. But it is possible for them to get in each other's way. A well-trained fighter can use this to get a precious moment of one-on-one combat with one of the attackers. We've all seen the unrealistic mass combat scenes from kung fu movies in which the lone brave hero stands in the center of a circle of attackers who for some reason only seem to want to attack him one at a time. This is obviously poor coordination on steroids. It's no wonder that such depictions cause disgust among martial arts instructors. So, am I saying that training for mass combat is practical? Well, I think, as is nearly always the case in the real world, that the truth is complex and nuanced. And as I'm fond of stating over and over again on this podcast, in the fine tradition of beating a dead horse, humans hate to spend time dealing with complexity and nuance. One of the first ways, I think, that you can prepare for the unfortunate event of being attacked by more than one person is to stay in good shape. And the best way that your condition can manifest itself, if such a terrible scenario should arise, is to weed out the slow ones. And by that I mean, begin your defense by running away as fast as you can. This reminds me of the situation in the old joke in which two campers are surprised when a large grizzly bear enters their campground. When one of the two begins quickly lacing up his shoes, the other says, "You can't run away. Bears are faster than people." And of course, the punchline is that the first camper says to the other over his shoulder as he sprints away, "I only need to be faster than you." In a similar vein, if you stay fit and can run at a decent clip for a while, you may only need to fight the fastest and fittest one or two of your opponents for several seconds, or even longer, rather than the entire lot. If your skill level is sufficient, that just might make the difference. Or you may totally luck out and outrun all of them. A second way to help when facing more than one attacker is to quickly try to improvise a weapon. Again, if your opponents are committed and coordinate themselves, this won't do much to help. But it may help a great deal in borderline situations. Now, so far I've been discussing what one individual might try when facing multiple attackers. But mass combat features a number of permutations besides this. What about evenly matched mass combat? Like two against two? Or what if you are one of two people attacked by three? Or three attacked by four? I especially think of scenarios like this for law enforcement officers and government special operators. If you regularly partner with the same person, it might be in your interest to work up a couple of different training scenarios. This can be analogous to a football team practicing different plays. If you carefully examine some of the maneuvers football players use to get momentary mismatches of two against one, commonly called double teaming, you should be able to practice doing this in mass combat scenarios. These tactics that I've described, these ways to get tiny moments of one-on-one matchups, should tell you that any form of mass combat is incredibly dangerous. Yet one more iteration of the message that violence should be avoided whenever possible. A form of self-defense closely related to mass combat is one in which you are engaged in a one-on-one fight, but your environment is full of people that you don't know. That means that you must have your antenna up for what is going on around you, as well as for what your opponent is doing. Yet another consideration for mass combat training is a case in which your side in the fight outnumbers the other side. Now, I know that in the abstract, this concept may offend your sense of fair play, but bear with me. It's perfectly plausible for a scenario to happen in which you and a friend find yourselves in a fight with a monstrously large human being. In a case like that, I think 2-on-1 is perfectly fair. Period. So I hope you agree when I assert that making simple, boilerplate declarations about what is and is not practical regarding mass combat is not helpful. I've learned through scientific skepticism that real understanding of a subject nearly always entails grappling with more complexity and nuance than you anticipated, even the subject of fighting multiple opponents. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of The Martial Brain at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about The Martial Brain or about the Rising Phoenix Academy at my website, rpmartialarts.com.